Welcome to the continuation of Down to Brass Tacks. You know, I'm going to start this phase of the program by looking a little bit at last night's meeting of the Barbados Labour Party in St. George North. As you are aware, a by-election is to take place in that particular constituency, and already certain issues have been emerging. As much as possible, I'd like to keep you in the know about these issues so that you can follow them. We have, at the same time, to take this opportunity to congratulate Ms. Verla de Pisa and other members of the executive of the Democratic Labour Party for what has taken place there over this past weekend, where a number of them have emerged victorious in their efforts to take on leadership positions in the DLP. But let's cross over now to what happened last night in St. George, where they had this meeting. I'm going to take about 15 minutes in all to share that with you. First, I'm going to let you hear from Tony Moore, who is the candidate for the Barbados Labour Party. Now, you know, various comments have been made about her decision, and we were told at one stage that she quite strongly said that she had no intention of running for elective office. Well, this is what she had to say last night.
In the past to take this road, and I never considered it seriously. As I have said in public and private spheres upon becoming General Secretary, and ever since then, mine was not the view that active involvement at the partisan level should be required to define the extent to which I can deliver for people. I said it because I believed it. And when I was urged by my predecessor in the position of General Secretary Sir Roy to reconsider my stance, I rejected it because of the further exposure I knew it would bring to me and my family in public life. I felt I had gone far enough. Because of the slanderous attacks, the likes of which have been fired at me over the past few days. For while in public life, as General Secretary, I can say I've had more than my fair share of abuse and criticism from the highest levels of leadership in this country too, I might add. I knew that with this decision, that would be a natural part of the course for me from here on in. When I was approached very formally less than 2 weeks ago, my immediate thought was no. But this was soon followed by very deep reflection. What would this mean for me personally? What would it mean for my family? What would it mean for the union if I said yes? But equally challenging me was what would it mean for the union and the people that I represent if I said no? At a time when COVID-19 has caused further disruption to working lives, at a time where the abuse of people is being rationalized in the name of the said COVID-19, at a time when we must stave off every inclination to see the value of work reduced to the lowest common multiple, at a time when fear is rampant, and when I have to watch people day on who need justice and who ought to be pursuing justice settle for half a loaf of bread because they fear that if they go after the whole loaf that they deserve, that they might end up losing even the half that they have. How could I say no to those whom I represent, that I was offered the opportunity to better uphold and influence their interests, but instead, I chose to wait for grapes to go sour and then keep noise over them that they're sour. Pick a noise after the fact, rather than picking a noise when I could make a difference. Every time I've had to address workers, I have had to challenge the fear. I had had to challenge them that fear is no response to hunger. Fear is no response to justice. Fear is no response to injustice. Fear is no response when you want to pursue an improved way of life. So then how can I submit to fear? Because I know the regular critics and cynics would desperately seek to use my decision as their attempt to gain an advantage. Barbados, were my answer no, I would be playing into the rhetoric and the small-minded thinking of some who believe that anarchy and stimulating fear and worry and antagonism from the outside is the only way and the best way of exerting pressure. I don't believe in that. I like to use my voice where it counts and not where it is heard. If I and my Barbados Workers Union partners and the wider trade union movement are going effectively to fight back and register gains for working people and their families, I could not turn down the invitation to have my voice impact decisions at the table of decision making. As I stand before you, I am not under any delusion that I can change the world. But I must use my brief stint here and my abundant commitment to serving people and the people of Barbados in particular to carry forward my struggle for the grassroots from which I have come. I want those of you who have followed the history of the Barbados Workers Union, and I want you...
So that's where we're going to leave the contribution coming from Tony Moore, the candidate for the Barbados Labour Party last night. Let's cross over now to what we heard from Prime Minister Mia Motley.
Honestly, I really want to know. You mean to tell me that Grant Lee could have chosen a union leader and run him in the form of Hugh Springer, but Mia Motley, the woman, can't choose another woman to run as a unionist? You mean to tell me that Grant Lee could have chosen Frank Walcott to run in St. Peter, but Mia Motley, a woman, can't choose the next woman to run as a unionist? You mean to tell me that Errol Barra could have chosen the same Frank Walcott after he was an independent and put it to run, but Mia Motley, the woman, can't choose the next woman to run in the third decade of the 21st century? You mean to tell me that Errol Barra and then Erskine Sandiford could choose Leroy Trotman to run, but this woman, Mia, can't choose the next woman to run? You mean to tell me that Hugh Cummins and Grant Lee could have settled upon Kiernar Husbands as an assistant general secretary to run, but this woman, Mia, can't choose Tony to run? You mean to tell me that the Dems could have choose Evelyn Graves and could have choose Bobby Morris and could have choose Yvonne Walks? I can't choose one to run as a woman? You mean to tell me that Frondelle could have take the woman that Tony beat for general secretary and beat bad too, Veronica Griffith? How many of you know that her reward for being beaten was to be made ambassador to CARICOM, a political post for the Democratic Labour Party, succeeding Bobby Morris, another unionist? You mean to tell me that Errol Barra could have called Horatio Cook and Mia Motley can't call this woman to run? You mean to tell me that David Thompson could have called Joe Goddard and put him in the UN as the permanent representative, but Mia Motley can't choose a woman to run? You mean to tell me that Walter Maloney could have stepped there as a stepney for the political party that he belonged to, and I can't do nothing? But don't start with Derek Arlene. Derek Arlene is a special breed of ingratitude.
Prime Minister Motley continued.
You mean to tell me that even Tom, who called for O'Brien Trotman and Tekim, you mean Tom could have called a man and I can't call for Tony? Huh? You mean to tell me I come into the BUT, but you think I forget Ronald Jones and Harry Husbands? Huh? You think I forget Undine Whitaker? You think I forget Pedro Shepherd, who is now a union leader tonight in this country and running for Democratic Labour Party office. And the difference between all of them is that when this young lady told you she was not interested in elective politics, she was telling the truth. And I kept telling her, I said, Tony, you will be the only general secretary of the Barbados Workers Union who will not have come to represent people in Parliament. And you need to go back and read the documents and to see that when the Workers Union was formed, it was always understood that it wasn't only about representing people in the union through the union and industrial relations, but that you needed to have a political voice in order to be able to influence policy and to protect the workers of this country. And I left the last. Which one reaching to the union movement and don't want me to do it now? Who is the next body that do it? Joe Averley. Joe Averley. Joe Averley went in. I don't know where he went, but he came from the Labour Party, and he took a man who also came from where? But Joe feel that it is good for him, but I, as a woman, can't do it. Tony, if you was red, if you was a man, they wouldn't have a word to say, because they would call you Caswell and say it's all right for you to come and join a political party. Caswell Franklin! I am so happy that up to a week ago, the Labour Party had membership representing workers in Parliament, and it wasn't Tony Moore. It was Caswell Franklin. Ask the General Secretary of the Barbados Labour Party to come now and tell you whether he has ever received a resignation from Caswell Franklin. And whereas the policies and philosophies of the Democratic Labour Party coincide with the policies and philosophies of the Barbados Workers Union, be it resolved that this 30th Annual Delegates Conference at Unity House, Roebuck Street, on August 28, 1971, expresses its solidarity for the said Democratic Labour Party in the forthcoming election. So not only did they run two people from the union in the Dems in 1971, and both won, but they also said that they were supporting the election campaign of the Democratic Labour Party.
On September 20th, the outgoing MP Glenn Clark said this.
We have several persons, eminent persons, who want to represent St. George and are qualified. I will be there to help, to guide, and to assist as much as I can.
Prime Minister Motley last night.
Tony Moore joined the Barbados Labour Party on Wednesday of this week. Her application went in on Tuesday. I proposed her. The Attorney General seconded her. The General Secretary and myself went and met with Senator Moore last week. Not this week that gone, the week in front. And that is when we approached her about running for us. And we said we need people to help us lift this heavy load. And we believe that the world is facing a perilous moment that can have disastrous consequences for workers. And that now is the time for all people interested in the interests of workers to band together and to come together and to defend what we have achieved over the last 80 years in this country. We took it to the Council of the Barbados Labour Party, and pursuant to Section 72H of our Constitution, we were able to abridge the rules to allow for her immediate membership of the party. Because we were conscious that we were also not only going with the union, but we were getting a good woman. And over the course of this campaign, you will hear the measure of this woman.
2020 is up.
Okay, so I don't think I have to say anything. I've given you enough that you can have your own say on these issues and others. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning. How are you keeping?
Morning.
Two things I want to talk about today. First, this CST fiasco. I think that the parents and students are targeting the wrong people. They need to target the Ministry of Education. They're the ones who got into agreement after saying that they would not have done it, who turned around and caused this mass confusion. So I feel that they're the ones.
Ministry of Education did not adjudicate the exams.
Yeah, but they agreed. They did not agree. This thing was discussed before. Even Jamaica has said they wouldn't have done it, and they turned around and did it too. See? And obviously, the Minister of Education is going to try to clear her in. May Raymond is not forever to mine, but when a person is right, I will stand by them, whether there's a forever of mine or not. And if I need to do with it, I feel all parents should have a sitting along with their children at the Ministry of Education for a long time. We got to stop this talking thing and protest. Yes, if you want to call me an extremist, yes. I don't believe in middle ground. The next thing, this thing with the bilateral in St. George. Bob Marley said in one of his songs, Rat Race, in the abundance of water, the fool is thirsty. I will let the BLP go over the seat. Nobody should contest it. And I know sooner or later it's going to become very, very complex. Very much so. Now, I have spoken to Ms. Moore about certain situations at Transport Board, including the flooding of Transport Board productive road. And there's a common sense thing. You've got to be a university graduate to see what I'm saying. If you have opposing people taking away the revenue that you should have been earning, sooner or later, there's going to be a layoff of staff from that entity that is now losing. Because you're losing money, but you still have large amounts of staff to pay.
Okay, thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Yes. I'm calling in connection, Mr. Ellis, with a problem that I am having with National Insurance. And this concerns my pension. Now, National Insurance put out there that you need to send in your account number and the institution that you use is that your pension can go there. Now, I have done all of that, and I'm a pensioner right now, and I got first three payments from National Insurance. I was looking for the payment in the mail as it was a custom coming. And the payment that will go from August the 31st to September, I did not receive. So I said, well, probably it has gone on to the institution that I gave them. I checked with the institution, Mr. Ellis, and it was not there because I said, let me give them some time. I decided to go down to National Insurance and to lay my case. I told them what happened. The lady told me, the teller told me, sorry, ma'am, but your money has been sent to the wrong institution. I said, but how can that be? Because I've put the number down, I've put the institution down. How come that it gone to the wrong institution? So she said, I don't know, it's just an error. I said, okay. Would you correct it because I need to have that money to pay my mortgage, which is due by the ending of this month? She said, okay, we'll do that. So I waited. No, before and after that, I went to the institution myself, and I asked them if they did get this transaction. The young lady said, yes, we did, and we have credited back to National Insurance. I said, okay, fine. I give a little more time. I check back with my credit union. It's not there. Gone back down to National Insurance. They said, we haven't got the credit yet. I said, but the the person said that it was sent. It was sent back. It's not anything that has to come in the mail. It's just a transaction through the computer. It doesn't need a rocket science to do that, to do a correction. Anyway, she said they will call me. But obviously, when they said they're going to call me, I'm not looking for that call at all because I don't have no sort of faith in the institution.
The upshot of it all is that you haven't received
the mail. And not only that, Mr. Ellis, but I called the institution today to find out if they got the next one, which came out on Friday. And she said, yes, they have sent the second one down here. Mr. Ellis, I think that's ridiculous, though.
Well, I think most people would agree with you.
I think that is ridiculous. Because now I have to go back to National Insurance on Tuesday to find out tomorrow, to find out what is going on. I think that's absurd. And I would tell people if they give no account number, don't give none. Let National Insurance send the mail all the time, send their check all the time in the mail. It's foolishness. Not they're going to suffer like me. Have a good day, Mr. Ellis.
Okay, ma'am. Sorry to hear of your plight, though. Down to Brass Tacks.
Good afternoon, brother.
It's good morning. It's 11:21.
How are you, Mr. Ellis?
I'm okay.
All right. You sound pretty pumped up today as neutral. Very pumped up. All right, Mr. Ellis, I've got three little balls here to bowl at you quickly. One, I may sound old-fashioned. Mr. Ellis, I was one of those persons who don't feel comfortable with barbers workers union leader being so hardcore in politics. And nothing personal against Toni Morrison. Even if it was a male there, it would be the same way. My feeling about anyone being the leader of our barbers workers union, I got jittery feelings about their running in that.
Why?
Politics.
But you've seen this happen time and time again in the past.
And if you care, if I kind of get feelings that there would be some sort of betrayal, you know. How are you sure, Mr. Ellis, that you won't be a traitor?
Okay.
Let's
reason this one. I mean,
yeah.
There are some elements of this that I think, you know, you could talk about. But
yes.
On the question of the record of people who have served as leaders of the Barbados Workers Union while at the same time sitting in Parliament, you have had quite a number of them so far. Then, as you've heard from the Prime Minister, there are those who also come from the NUPW. And what is clear is that there has been a strong link between trade unionism and politics, and in particular over the years, the greater beneficiary has been the Democratic Labour Party. That's factual. Now, how do you come to say that you feel uncomfortable today when you have lived through that? And one example of it has been the fact that back in 1991, 20,000 people marched twice, led by trade unions, and in particular by the Barbados Workers Union's Leroy Trotman, who was sitting as General Secretary of the Barbados Workers Union and sitting in Parliament as a member of the Democratic Labour Party under the Sandy Ford leadership. They will say to you, that's an example of the kind of position that could be taken by the trade union leader while being part of the ruling administration. That it does not necessarily mean that you will have what you might describe as a betrayal of the workers' cause.
But, Stelis, you as a top journalist, we can go back. We can go back. If you go back between 86 and 76 with both leaders, mm-hmm. Barrow and Tom Adams, you yourself know that in those times people people doesn't trust Crockman either. They don't want him not to participate in active politics. The people on the small man on the roadside weren't comfortable with it.
You're fighting hard. The person who is in that position will naturally have to fight harder. But there's one dimension to this that I would throw into the discussion. When people refer to the link between the trade union and the political parties in the past, that was before we had a so-called social partnership, you know. What is being promoted here is that you cannot really influence policy until and unless you sit in parliament. And you know, given the structure of our system, the real power these days and for a long time has rested with the executive. So it stands to reason that if you really want to influence policy, you can't just sit in parliament. Not today.
All right, let me ask you a question.
Let me make the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
You also have to be part of the executive. Now, if you listen to what the Prime Minister said last night,
yeah.
She said that from Tony Moore's previous position, because she was part of that social partnership, she was able to influence things and bring about change.
And she also
Yet they are arguing that she has to be in Parliament to influence change. What you have to explain to me is how much difference is going to be made by that presence there today. And I'm not negating what was said before about the Dems and how Evelyn Graves, Frank Walcott, Leroy Trotman, and then the people from the BUT and all of that. I'm not negating that at all. I think that that's between the Democratic Labour Party and the BLP. But I'm saying you create a completely different environment, and essentially what is coming through here is that they are saying to all the rest of us, you really can't make you have no influence on policy in this country unless you sit in parliament. That's what they're saying.
Okay, so why Ms. Toni Moore said earlier in her sentiments that while she was leader of the Barbers Workers Union, she never had plans to be an active politician. Why all of a sudden?
But she explained that.
But
might not be to your liking, but she explained
that
it.
That is not to my liking. I want to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you a question as a fantastic journalist who was before. Couldn't the PM have... Don't get me wrong, I got nothing personal against Toni Moore. She's a young, brilliant woman. I got nothing personal against her. But could the PM have choose another candidate to be nominated?
The PM could choose whatever. Clearly, we are in an environment, whatever the Prime Minister wants, the Prime Minister can get. It is as simple as that. She could have chosen anybody else, but she has opted for that because, as she has outlined it, there has long been a nexus between the trade union and the political parties in the country. And it is portrayed as though it is natural. It is like if you become Chief Justice of Barbados, you get a knighthood. Okay, if you become the General Secretary of the Barbados Workers Union, your next step is that you must be in Parliament. That is how that has been, projected in the way that we've heard the Prime Minister articulate it, and that it is from Parliament that you are then able to really influence policy.
Let me ask you a question. Suppose down the line, the same trade unionists and the same trade unions were to come to loggerheads with the PM.
But that's happened in the past.
That's what I mean. I don't remember it happening. It can happen again. What was she on?
When you deal with it, when as it arises, I mean, how she would deal with it. That's hypothetical. When it happens, you deal with it as you see fit in the circumstances. Okay?
All right, let me make my last point here. My last point.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Davis?
Mm-hmm.
The 12 month welcome stamp that the PM had endorsed. how beneficial you see this to be in upgrading or to help our tourist industry. You see any ways in which this could be beneficial to our tourist industry? Get it starting again?
Starting, but that by itself won't be able to do it. It needs more than that. I mean, I think it's a positive start. I honestly see it as such.
But I don't
believe that it is the be-all and end-all. You tell me what you think.
I think this 12-month welcome stamp thing should be put on the back burner a little bit. I just got a feeling that...
What feeling? This thing based on no feelings. You got to go on the basis of something concrete. Your emotions don't really matter in this.
But sometimes emotions just be right, though, you know.
Well, the Prime Minister got emotions, too, so you can go with hers for now. Okay?
All right. I can get back to you, though.
Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks.
So, what you thought about the presentation?
That's barely a scam, man.
How do you mean? It's a good way to make extra money.
That man's trying to get me into a pyramid scheme, boss.
A pyramid what? This is Barbados, not Egypt. We ain't got the pyramids boat here.
Listen, I hear the Fair Trading Commission warning people about these pyramid schemes, where they get people to invest their money, and then those people bring in other people, and it's one big network. But a lot of the times, the people at the bottom never see a cent, and sometimes all the money has disappeared. In other words, it is illegal.
But I hear people swear that they make money from these things. You sure?
Look, you clearly in denial about this pyramid scheme thing. So you could give those people your money, but my money staying right here in my pocket.
Not sure if it's a real business opportunity or a scam? Contact the Fair Trading Commission at 424-0329 or message us at FTC Barbados on Facebook or Instagram.
This person writes that they are seeing massive crowds outside polyclinics. They say the lines are very long and there is no social distancing. They would have expected that these health institutions would have paid more attention to this. And that last Thursday, they passed by the one in Black Rock. The line outside was so long, one lady came in the gas station and said she was there since before 7 in the morning. And no one was there to assist them after 9 o'clock. They were still outside there at that time. Today, Monday, I could see the same problem at the one at Six Roads. The person is asking this question. Is this a case of shortness of staff, or is it the stress from COVID that is making more people have health issues? What is your observation? Down to brass tacks. Hello?
David, good morning. This is Kami Holder here.
Good morning.
Good morning. I want to actually speak to what happened in your first hour program this morning.
Yes.
As it relates to the abuse of children. David, the system is extremely broken. And the pause this morning by Ms. Crawford was very instructive of a system which shows total indifference to emotional abuse of kids. Now, recently we had a situation where taxi men were complaining of being unemployed. And men have reported to me that when they offer groceries, now they're unemployed, they've been told, we want cash. You have a situation in this country where fathers' names are deliberately left off of school registration forms. They can't go to PTA. They can't participate in education aid for the children. You have situations where fathers are seeing children 3 hours every other week, which is 3 days a year. Now, I have had calls to go to child care board where men complained to me also that they've gone there and they were not given the level of attention or respect that was due to them. But we tend to behave in this country that a family court do their panacea for all problems as men. And it is really telling that we have such a large men population in the government, and men seem not to have any great representation in this parliament. And it is really sad. I don't know what you have to say about that.
I think the politics of Barbados is at a very interesting stage. Sometimes when you have men in charge, men can be pretty oblivious and disrespectful to the challenges that other men face. What is happening here is that we are getting more and more women drafted into the politics of Barbados. Indeed, if you listen to how the Prime Minister spoke last night, you would see that gender, the gender question, is very, very strong. It is, these men could get away with this, and we can't get away with it as women. It isn't, and in many instances, the politics doesn't come down to women and men. In some instances, it may, but not in all. In many instances, it's just the politics itself that is playing out. But what you're seeing here is what is likely to be more and more of a determined effort to bring more women into the politics to deal with the balance issue that has been discussed so much, not only here, but elsewhere. And maybe for you, you may get more of a sympathetic ear, you may, from some of those people, some of the women, than you are getting from men. Men have long behaved as though nothing was wrong. And there are still men today who will tell you, as far as they're concerned, so what? That's not an issue for them. So they're not going to go after that.
And you are very correct, because I can remember last year when this family court was mooted. I'm hearing we are coming to the family court and made it better for mothers. What about fathers? Now, I have been trying to get this government to understand there's something called support in kind. David and listeners, there are a lot of men who are unemployed today. And for a mother to say to a man, I want money, not groceries, is not in the best interest of a child. There is a piece of legislation that was drafted by the last DLP government, which spoke to the extended family, providing the school clothes, the bus fare, and groceries. But this government has no interest, it seems, in looking after the welfare of men. Not only women vote in this country, you know, and I'm calling upon the Mayor Morley administration to listen to the cries of men. Men are hurt in this country. It is not fair that men have been going to court and being given a bad rap because all men are seen as delinquents. And it's not fair. That's all I wanted to say.
I think that in all of this, we have to come to terms with what the gender conflict has produced in Barbadian society to date. And some of what we are seeing out there on the streets and the things that we are complaining about have their genesis in that conflict. All of us have a role to play in trying to reduce the conflict and create a climate where people can work together in the interests of the children. Whether you are living together or separated or divorced. And we have to be cognizant of how we portray the gender divide as a nation, because things that happen at one level have a way of trickling down to another level and moving up from the bottom up, you know? So sometimes in the polemics and in the desire to get one thing or another, the language that we use and the way that we portray things have a way of exacerbating a problem rather than, you know, trying to pour some kind of balm over it, you know? And this must be remembered at all levels, you know? Even, I mean, when you have to deal with the issue yourself, you got to be sensitive to how you talk about it, and so would I, okay? So the real struggle here is to find a way of living together, a way of solving the problem, a way of encouraging. Look, I've been through the process that other men talk about with children separated and divorced and that sort of thing. And, you know, you got to encourage men to be there for the children, because it don't last forever, you know. In next to no time, you will see that this child is 18 years of age. The child that was, 7 years old and 6 years old and all of that, in next to no time. And if you're not careful, right? I understand what you're saying, that the system can sometimes block you But do you know what? We then have to be looking for alternative ways of just staying in touch, whether the woman or the judge or the or whoever else is trying to block you. You still do your best to say, I'm here. And the other part of that is your own skills, your set of skills for dealing with the child when you get the opportunity to have the child with you and stuff like that. Don't take the child, even your cooking skills and things like that, you got to work on them things so that your child is not exposed to eating out more often than it should. And you see a mix of things come into play here.
David, I'll tell this much, right? Because Mr. seems, I don't know what's happened to Mr. Mr. seems not to be looking after the interest of men or does not care. Look, men will say to
Mr. is just weak, you know, Cammy. Mr. is suffering from the situation that confronts so many organizations, but it is worse for men. Men don't get caught up too much in things like that. They see that as too emotional. You know, that's it.
Okay, so tell me, give me the advice. I want you, the public, give me the advice. Man turns up for his child, and all he hear, oh, the child is going to come at you today, or the child got bellyache, or the man goes to the school, or your neighbor's not in school registration form. How can you then get spend time with that child? Now, a teacher said to me 2 months ago, sir, I've been hearing what you've been doing, and I want to commend you. I have children who are being bullied in school because, you know what? Their peers are saying to them, your father died. We never see your father yet. And that is what's happening in our society.
You know, the truth of the matter is, though, that structured as it is, there are some men who can only bide their time when they are facing that kind of problem. They got to create an environment where the child knows that they are available, that they are there. Sometimes you will never be able to get that done until that child reaches the stage and age where it can reach out to you and interact. You may think it's too late, but sometimes you're wrong in thinking that way. So you bide your time and you recognize that, you know, at some stage, this child is going to come looking for its father. So I would say to you, I encourage what you're doing, but you need more men there with you, you know. It can't be just you. And
but the men are scared, man. I don't know why the men seem to be so scared, because it's their macho-ness or whatever it is. But they are
Men are not just scared. A lot of men just don't have the fight. Men have the brawn, but they don't have that kind of inner strength and fight. And men tend to run away from those issues. That's how we are made up, generally speaking, you know. Generally.
But you know what, David? But then you find that that girl, child or boy, child who does not have that male strong male figure in their life finds it difficult to navigate life later on down the road.
That's true.
And that is a concern.
That's true. And
then the court system.
I know people who have girl children who have grown up now. And one of the biggest challenges they face is that they see them in relationships with people who just, you know, they feel that they are disrespected and stuff like that. And in many instances, they look back at what happened before and say, but part of this comes out of the period of the 80s and the 90s, where people were of the view that you didn't really need to have a father around, that women were advocating this thing that they could raise the children on their own and that sort of thing. But, you know, the children need both parents. They need that influence. They need that guidance. And, you know, let's fight for it as best as we can, but not in an adversarial way with the women. That's the most important point that I want to make. That we achieve nothing by fighting this thing in that way, you know? Thanks for calling. Yeah. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? You're on the air. Hello?
Mr. Ennis?
Hi.
Good morning, Mr. Ennis. How are you?
I am well. And you?
I'm fine. Thank you. I'm calling about national insurance as well. I have a problem with them. I called them last week about my unemployment check, because I haven't received a check since June, you know, July. And I was asked, do you have, you know, the various, about the, you have to pass on your number, information of where your banking is associated. So I did all of that. The lady asked me now, have you got, I said, no. She said, well, your money has gone onto a bank. I said, onto a bank? And then they called the bank's name. I was like, I don't bank with that bank, so how can my check go on there? She said, you sure? I said, yes. She said, okay, I'll get back to you in the week, you know, and give you some information on it. I'll check on it. So say she did, got back to me. When she got back to me, she told me, your check is in the mail. I waited. No check incoming in the mail. This today, no check. I called. When I called now, the same thing. The lady said, well, your money has gone on to the bank. I said, on to the bank? How can my money go to the bank when I have not given you all that information? So I don't know if you can get someone for national insurance.
Me? Get somebody for national insurance? Please, don't even ask for it on this program. National insurance don't operate so. National insurance will send a statement through GIS in a couple of days' time, and they will be telling you basically what problems they have had, and they will not create an environment where they can speak to you, the members of this public, directly. That's their business. As far as I'm concerned, we've been through this time and time again. Don't expect them to respond to anything in a direct way here or elsewhere. Okay? That's not how they operate.
But Mr. Ellis, but how can you put money on an account for someone that doesn't have an account at the institute?
Well, I don't know. I can't. All I can say is that from what I hear from people, clearly the NIS has, yes, we sympathize with them because clearly they have a heavy workload. Yeah. But they have, even in better times, they were not able to respond to complaints when they had far fewer people coming at them. Mm-hmm. And what has been done so far seems to be inadequate. It is inadequate in terms of the internal machinery that they are using, the processes that they have. And then there remains this inadequacy in terms of communication. They need to do better in terms of being able to get people to respond to the telephones. They have some people, somebody wrote last week, and they were highly complimentary of a young lady with whom they dealt. But generally speaking, they have a lot of work to do.
Yes, they do.
And, you know, when we talk about improving the machinery of government and that sort of thing, that's one of the areas that is challenging with this new administration.
That is true. That is true. But they need to communicate with the public. And as I said before, we've got bills to be paid and food to be bought, children to be sent to school, and you just can't be going. You've gone on your savings, you've taken off your money, there's no more.
Yes.
And then, you know, you can't go and borrow from other people, because when you borrow money from someone and you borrow again, when you get your money now, you've got to pay that bill along with the other bills. So where does that leave you? National insurance. Mm-hmm. They need some sort of better system.
And COVID makes this situation all the more urgent. You know, this is not a normal time. And therefore, it is especially in this environment that you would expect that you would see some determined effort to improve this. Whoever is responsible for NIS should be communicating with the public, even if it means that the minister responsible should be speaking to the public and updating them. If you don't want to expose the members of the team, the management team or whatever, to that, or the board or whatever, but somebody needs to take the bull by the horns. It is what they are doing there is not acceptable.
Well, no, it's not.
I mean, it's clear for everybody to see. We get enough complaints here about it. to suggest that, you know, don't expect that we're going to be able to. All we can do is let you hear your views and stuff, but we can't influence their behavior there, because
no.
And they think when you raise it, you get the impression that they feel that you're just trying to make the life miserable or something. So
that is so correct. That is so correct.
You know, that's not the plan.
That's not the plan. No, I thank you for listening to me, and I hope they hear it. And as you said, they go to GIS and let us hear something.
Whatever. Wherever they go, let them go and get something done about
it. Thank you very much. Do have a pleasant day.
All right. Down to brass tacks.